my sight, hope for a generation.
Countryman, fellow slaves of the plantation, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So get ready to laugh, get ready to listen, and be prepared to learn. Because although your enslavement is serious business, it doesn't mean you have to take it seriously. Here's your host, the indubitable Vinnie Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that likes to have its episodes in public, preferably at a restaurant. Now, my very special guest that's joining me today, speaking of restaurateuring, is going to be talking about the Natural Health Products Regulation Bill. What's the Natural Health Products Regulation that's going on right now, you ask? Oh, I'm glad you really did ask, because you didn't fucking know it was happening, did you? Did you? All the people in this country who I talk to on a daily basis who are really up for the play with the TPPA and the local government corruption and everything, right, have no idea that right under their noses, their ability to have natural health products, supplements, etc. like that is going to be confiscated under something that has another name other than Natural Health Products Bill. It's called Codex Alimentarius, a global food code to make sure that, hey, you know who's really, really good for nutrition and education about health? The giant corporations who profit from you not having any nutrition or any knowledge of health. Okay, guess who's behind these bills? Guess who's financing all the politicians and everything like that who are pushing this? I don't know for sure. I'm just taking a stab in the dark, because when I see somebody who has an interest and I see somebody pushing that person's interest, I assume that they're colluding. You know, that might just be me, an anomaly in the journalistic field, but I think it's a good idea, generally speaking. My very special guest is Dr. Guy Hatchard. Guy, welcome to the program.
Welcome.
Now,
you to my home here on in Northland. Overlooking the Pacific this morning.
You might want to hold your microphone a little bit closer to your face there. That's all. that's very, very good testing there. Now, if you would give us a little bit of a background about who you are and what it is you do, and then we'll get into the scurrilous regulation that faces the country at the moment.
Well, I have an interest in Ayurvedic medicine, and my career has been in food safety and promoting alternative systems of developing health.
You'll have to define Ayurvedic medicine for the ignorant person here.
Ayurvedic medicine is the traditional medicine of India. It's thousands of years old. It's the world's oldest medical system. And even today, the majority of medical consultations in India are Ayurvedic. And it's a very sophisticated system. It involves herbal remedies. It involves purification procedures. There's surgery as a part of Ayurveda. And it's materia medica, involves something like 7,000 herbs and their effects. So it's a natural system of medicine that is really the oldest system in the world.
So it predates the Rockefeller medical cartel medical system, huh?
I was interested in what you were saying, because the Natural Health Products Bill is definitely a global phenomenon. There are similar regulations being passed and being implemented in Canada and Australia and South Africa and the EU. And it is a move towards the extreme regulation of plants, really, of food. And that's an extraordinary takeover procedure that is going ahead everywhere.
So the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take is first do no harm, but the hypocritical oath that they take is first do profits for the big pharmaceutical companies by eliminating the competition and saying that competition is really dangerous. Now, how many people have died by natural supplements and or nutritional foods in New Zealand, and why is it so dangerous exactly?
Well, no coroner has ever recorded a death from natural products here in New Zealand.
I'm shocked.
The Poison Control Center in the United States, its reports show that no one dies from taking minerals or vitamins. There's a report out in the EU which found that natural health products were 45,000 times safer than pharmaceutical drugs, and actually 75 times safer than eating a meal at home. So they are pretty safe.
So it's kind of like, who was it that said this? I think there was indeed one death attributed to natural health products, and that was when somebody accidentally fell in a machine that was pressing the pills. You know, I mean, it's a cautionary tale.
That's about it, really. There is no risk to the public. It's being promoted as something that will reduce risk for the public. But actually, the opposite is the case, because one of the clauses, just one line in the very long bill, says that you're allowed to put synthetic substances into natural health products. So it's actually the opposite effect that the bill will have. It'll introduce cheap synthetics and additives into natural food products, which actually do carry risks. And it's a way, actually, of perpetuating past mistakes with the regulation of foods. A lot of things in our foods are actually not good for health. And that line has been slipped in, that all of those things can simply be put in to your natural health products and no one will know. So it's debasing the whole term natural, actually.
Ooh. Marketing, right? That's what it is, right? It's the government going into bat for the marketing companies who represent the pharmaceutical interest, essentially, right? They're trying to demonize the commercial competition, which would be the products that are safe and actually prevent and or cure disease, versus your products, which are dangerous and have never cured a disease in human fucking history.
It's certainly, it's interesting what you said about the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. And I was reading an article only yesterday about the side effects of pharmacological drugs. And the author, this is from the British Journal of Pharmacological Drugs, basically, it said that it's impossible to do no harm. And of course, natural health products is an industry really that is dedicated to improving people's health in a way that is only nourishing. Natural health products are plants, and we are used to digesting plants. You know, we grew up with plants. In the Vedic tradition, they're referred to as the mothers of mankind.
Sorry, the Vedic tradition?
The Vedic tradition is Vedic. Where Ayurveda comes from. Veda just means knowledge, actually. So Vedic tradition is, Ayurveda is part of the Vedic tradition, and it's a tradition of knowledge. Ayurveda, Ayu means life, Veda means knowledge, so it's knowledge of life. And in that tradition, the plants are hailed as the mothers of mankind. And in a modern scientific context, what that means is we share DNA, we co-evolved with plants. They really were, they are something that we can digest. So foods that are based on DNA, the body can assimilate them and knows how to deal with them, because this is a process that has been going on for millions of years. Whereas when you have any other kind of compound, pharmaceutical compound, then they are not based on DNA. They're not derived from DNA. And
aren't they DNA destroying?
They can have very serious side effects, extremely serious side effects, and because they're not something that the body is capable of dealing with very well.
Okay, essentially, it's the medical equivalent of, hey, here's a live hand grenade. What do you do with it? You know, the person might panic or they might throw it back at you. They might throw it out the window, and you know, that kind of thing. It's just basically you're putting a time bomb in somebody's hand. That's what you're doing when you're giving somebody a lot of psychotropic drugs to a large degree. let's think about the worst side effects that we're talking about. It was suicide, heart attacks, and the life-threatening ones, brain aneurysms, grand mal seizures, and the list goes on and on and on. And then you go to the side effects of your chewable vitamin C, you know, over here, orange flavoring, right? That's the side effect. You taste oranginess when you chew. Okay, I want to.
Well, I mean, one could laugh, but actually one of the products that is set to be banned is one of our most popular vitamin C products. It doesn't have any history of doing any harm. What has happened with the approval of pharmaceutical drugs over the years is that there has been a kind of a shift in the assessment of risk. As the drugs become more invasive. And in fact, there's a crisis in modern medicine in a sense, because a lot of drugs are becoming ineffective and there are new kinds of conditions coming up. So there has been a shift in the risk assessment to a point where drugs can have very, very serious side effects. And yet they somehow or other, there is a logic that perhaps it's acceptable, because if... six people might be benefited and two people might be seriously impaired or put at risk, then somehow that's an acceptable risk. And that, of course, has moved a long way from the Hippocratic Oath. And natural products actually have a huge capacity to benefit serious conditions. I mean, take turmeric, for example. You know, bowel cancer is one of our most serious illnesses here in New Zealand. 3,000 people will be diagnosed with bowel cancer every year, and only 55% of them will survive beyond 5 years. Turmeric has been shown to prevent the precursors of bowel cancer. There are absolutely no side effects from turmeric. Turmeric is something that you have in your kitchen. It's also been beneficial for people with end-stage bowel cancer. Even with end-stage bowel cancer, a significant percentage of people will benefit from introducing turmeric into their diet. And this is the kind of preventive strategy that we need to be pouring money into. We don't need to be pouring money into restricting people's natural health choices. It would be completely immoral to pass this bill. People have a right. You know, when you're seriously ill, people have a right to... choose how they're going to deal with that situation. And they need to look around. You do need to look around if you're seriously ill. You need to look around at your options.
And the key word there, ladies and gentlemen, is you need to look around. It doesn't actually mean that you take somebody's advice, go to referrals, only them, and just get a few advices within. Look at a number of different fields, you know, cast your net wide. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? You know, you might die. That's going to happen to you anyway. You might as well try and cure yourself, you know. What have you got to lose? I mean, you know, am I wrong? Am I being too cynical here? When we're talking about these curative stages, etc., of a disease, I was recently speaking to Dr. Leonard Caldwell, who's cured like 30,000 people of cancer, right? Just... through diet, nutrition, and also what's going on up here in your mind, right? Absolutely. That is actually the most, he says that your mind is the number one causer of cancer, that if you're living a life that you hate, if you're robbing yourself of your destiny, if you don't like your daily life, your body will reject your lifestyle by giving you cancer as a wake-up call to make you stop living other people's life and start living yours, right? It's that kind of thing. And I was like, this is something that if you said on national radio, they would go, this is dangerous. This is terrible. Really? Taking charge of your own life, doing what you actually feel is right, and taking care of yourself by having a broad knowledge of nutrition and also the body's own ability to repair itself if you give it the right tools to do so, that's dangerous? Because the opposite that's being projected here is that to do that kind of thing, not only is it dangerous, but it also sets a really bad example. No. What you need is to appeal to some kind of authority figure who's wearing a lab coat and or is financed by some pharmaceutical company, who is then appointed as a representative for the government, who is in turn representing a party that was financed by those same pharmaceutical companies and a whole bunch of banking interests on as well, who also own the pharmaceutical companies, and they all attend globalist conferences, and they have the exact same ideology and the exact same line that they're pushing in every single branch of government, which is make people sick and dependent and create a crisis. Therefore, when you have a crisis, you can justify taking away people's rights because they will be afraid and they will panic and they'll also be uninformed when the time comes to defend themselves.
It's, first of all, you know, in comment to that is that in Ayurveda, the number one approach to health is through consciousness, meditation, yoga, transcendental meditation, for example, highly researched approach to health that is very effective in improving disease. Research has shown that people who practice transcendental meditation regularly have a 50% reduction in their need for healthcare, for hospitalization, because your mind is the number one. It's the key thing. So you the things that you have control over are your consciousness, your experience, your behavior, and your food. And that is the number one approach. Those four together are the number one approach to health.
And so, what are all the things that the government tries to control in your everyday life? And what's our current cancer rate? It's like 1 in 1, 1 in 2, something around that region, right? It's
well, in the UK, for example, the annual budget for preventive measures for health is 50 times smaller than the annual budget of the pharmaceutical companies to promote the use of pharmaceutical drugs. In the US, pharmaceutical companies spend an average of $61,000 per doctor each year promoting the use of drugs by basically giving freebies to doctors. So we have a total imbalance in our healthcare system. The prevention is definitely through these four factors, through changes in lifestyle, through changes in diet, through improving people's consciousness and experience, how they deal with life. These are the most effective approaches by far to developing health. They're really the factors under our control.
To inspire people and make them independent makes them healthier, right? Dr. Caldwell told me as well that the reason why doctors can't cure disease is they study disease. If they wanted to cure disease, they'd study health. You know?
It's absolutely right. Health, you know, it has become a disease care system. I don't want to attack modern medicine because it can be quite complementary with natural approaches to health. And in fact, that's what's starting to happen in the United States. 75% of U.S. colleges now have courses for doctors in alternative healthcare. You know, if you've broken your hip, then you have to have your hip repaired. And but at the same time, to cope with that kind of operation, you have to improve your general health. You have to improve your mental health. You have to improve your physical health, your diet, the way you handle your consciousness. These are all important factors in overcoming a serious operation that perhaps you need. So that there is a there's no conflict here. It's not that anyone is saying you have to stop going to see your doctor. You don't have to stop going to see your doctor. And most people know they're sick, they have to see their doctor because they have diagnostic tools and so on and so forth. But
that's where their strength is, diagnosing what's actually wrong. Beyond that, if it's physiological, broken bones, etc., dislocated shoulder, sweet, if it's something that you can see and fix right there. But if it's disease related, if it's an illness, right, something that's actually affecting you, they're the people who can identify it, but they're not the people who'll be able to get rid of it, generally speaking. And
it's a lot of chronic disease. Yes, you know, 50% of us suffer from one form of chronic disease or another. So their chronic disease means it's not really curable by modern medicine. You can hide the symptoms, but very often the process of hiding the symptoms is, can make you more sick.
But again, that seems like marketing to me. There is no cure. Therefore, we've got the only alternative for the crisis that we created.
Yeah, definitely. There is definitely an element here, and strong element, of defending a monopoly of a paradigm of healthcare that really has started to miss the whole point of what health is. I once met Hans Selye, who was the father of the modern concept of stress in Canada. And he said that stress is the non-specific response of the body to any stimulus. Well, similarly in health, it's the generalized health of the body, the efficiency of the way it deals with experience, that defines health. So that is what is missing in that's the key factor to deal with when you're dealing with health.
Okay. The current health system, like when we have our medical students, when they go in and they learn about this, they learn about treatment with drugs, right? They have about maybe 30 minutes on nutrition, and that's just talking about malnutrition in like Africa and stuff like that. These kids need more food. That's about how much they know about nutrition, which is another Hippocrates quote is, let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food. And so naturally, the people who take the Hippocratic oath don't study nutrition!
Yeah, they don't study nutrition. So they're lacking the knowledge of nutrition. But no, the interesting thing was you said that they study drugs. And, surprisingly, there was a trend in the 1980s and 1990s to actually do away with courses for doctors where they studied drugs. So they actually stopped teaching doctors about how to prescribe drugs. And that means they stopped teaching doctors about the side effects, about the interactions between drugs, and about when drugs were counterindicated for what people, in what circumstances.
So they essentially cut pharmacology from the people who prescribed the pharmaceuticals education.
They abdicated their responsibility in the medical colleges. Unfortunately, there's a trend for this to come back, but for a long period, they abdicated their responsibility there. And they just said, well, when you go and see a doctor, they read that little book about what drug is for what condition. And that's essentially what they were left with, the pharmaceutical company in charge of what the doctors did. So the fox in charge of the hen house. And that was a huge mistake. Because what we're left with now is a situation where doctors are really not very knowledgeable about the mutual interactions of drugs.
Not to correct you, but I don't think it was a mistake if there is some benefit from the decision, right? And now the general public doesn't benefit from the decision, but the people who have shares in the pharmaceutical companies and also all the major banks and most of the rest of the military industrial pharmacological complex, that pretty much out of 84 people, according to Oxfam, control about 50 to 60% of the world's wealth. You ever been at a poker table, bro? Where one guy has the big stack, right? And everybody else has virtually nothing left. And you know that as soon as somebody gets to that point of having the big stack, how much easier it is for them to take all the rest of the remaining chips off of everybody on the board. That's what we're going on. That's what's going on here with the Natural Health Products Bill, isn't it? What's the exact name of it? And what do you think its real implications are in terms of cost to the public health, right? Because I would estimate that without access to natural health products, you'd probably have people dying from everyday illnesses, essentially. left, right, and centre. What was it? I think it was Dr. Rima Labo said something like a few billion people might die if Codex Alimentarius got implemented worldwide and regulated the sale of natural health products and stuff like that, just from ordinary diseases and malnutrition alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, malnutrition is a huge problem. And it's a problem for our people who are obese. So, you know, obesity driven by processed foods containing high levels of salt, sugar, corn fructose, and so on, driving obesity. But what happens when you're obese? You actually start to suffer from malnutrition. So that's something that a simple piece of dietary advice could fix. And the pressure on the organs, on the liver, and the whole digestive process could be relieved with a few very simple interventions from natural health products. And that's definitely, you know, you're talking about a takeover here, and definitely what we've experienced in Australia, which has had this kind of law for several years now, is that small companies go out of business. What you're left with is larger companies that are producing cheap knockoffs of natural health products using synthetics. So that what you're buying in the supermarket is not necessarily, it says it's healthy, but it's not healthy.
So it means only the wealthy and the well-connected and the well-clued up will be able to get access to clean food and actual nutrition. All the rest of the people that are dumbed down and malnourished simply won't be able to afford to have access to that kind of knowledge or the real products. And so you would create a giant underclass of slaves and a very tiny elite of very healthy people who are still able to think and survive.
Yeah, you know, food is our heritage. You can't throw away food. I mean, all these...
But we do.
I'd say you can't, but you could try to. But I mean, if you want life to survive, then they're here to help us survive. They can cure disease. They are, you know, they're actually little packets of intelligence. Each plant has its own DNA structure, and it represents a packet of intelligence that has the capacity, because of its long mutual interaction with human beings, it has the capacity to maintain health in some way. So you look at the Warburg diet, for example, you know, which is a very successful diet developed by a doctor who became extremely sick and then realized that with MS that she had to tackle her own situation. And she did it by increasing the variety of plants in her diet. Basically 9 different kinds of vegetables a day and in much bigger quantities than we do consume. And plants can heal. And if we take plants out of the diet, then we're lost, because that's what we are designed to digest.
It's like a bio blood transfusion. If you look at the nucleus of a plant cell, it has the same compositional elements as a human blood cell, except at the center of it, instead of a red iron molecule, it's got a green chlorophyll molecule. But your body is able to ingest that plant matter and decode the DNA, and the chlorophyll molecules can be there. And it's essentially like eating a blood transfusion, right? And actually cleaning your blood that way. And what was it? When they take your blood out and then they oxygenate it, ozone therapy, right?
Yes.
When that really rich cherry red blood comes back in the body after that dark, sludgy black blood comes out, you know, that disease sort of thing. I mean, the body is a system, but it's an organic system. It's not like a machine where you can just swap out a part and or replace things and stuff like that. You know, it's meant to work in harmony. And people come up to their doctors with a disease and they say, "Doctor, what can you do for me that won't require me to change?" And if the doctor is a good doctor, he'll say, "There's nothing I can do for you if you don't want to change."
That's right. That's absolutely right. You have to, you know, you're faced with life. Look, life is constantly changing anyway. Every cell in your body will get replaced in the next 3 months. It's a stream, the body. It has three elements that are working in it. One is flow, and another is structure, and another is transformation. So your body is constantly working within these paradigms. It's intelligence in the form of plants is flowing into the body. It gets transformed and becomes structure. And at the same time, those three elements are responsible for removing what has been used up. So that it's a constant stream of intelligence. And what if you're not putting natural materials into your body, you fail to maintain health. And this is not this is not sort of airy-fairy thinking. This is science, basically. It's well understood. A lot of bodily processes are now well understood. A lot of benefits of a lot of different foods and plants are well understood. This is not fringe science. This is one of the defects of this natural health products bill, is it has come out of, it's 16 years old. It was first thought of 16 years ago. In those 16 years, we've moved on. We've moved on in science. We know a lot more about the effects of things that we do and we eat. And we've moved on as a public in our choices, in our understanding. And even the medical community has moved on in its understanding of, and they've realized now, they've come to the conclusion that everybody is different. And, you have this whole concept of personalized medicine, functional medicine coming up. So you have at the cutting edge of medicine, you have people who are kind of waking up to principles which had become lost, principles of diet, principles of nutrition, principles of lifestyle, and so on. So we've all moved on. This is a bill that is out of the last century, basically. It's a bill that still is in this paradigm that there are magic bullets in modern medicine for everything. And this is, of course, a completely discredited idea now. That was something that came out of the discovery of antibiotics and so on, where people suddenly thought everything can be cured by modern medicine. Well, that's simply known to be absolutely incorrect.
Mm. People will hear things like this, but you go, but that doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? Okay, just bear with me a moment. Close your eyes. Meditate for a second. Okay. Deep breath. The world is run by really crazy people. Now, does the world suddenly make a fuckload more sense to you? Yes? Okay, I thought it might. Have you got crazy people that have a penchant for money and power and sex and not really a whole lot of care about relationships, other people, don't really have a whole bunch of human emotions, not much creativity, they like to control things a hell of a lot, and they're really quite willing to lie, sabotage, cheat, steal, manipulate, defame people, attack them, and really kill them if they get in their way? All right, now for those of you who study psychiatry a little bit, you'd hear the word sociopath or psychopath a little bit. Now what's problematic about this is that, and by the way, all of this, the really funny thing is, guy, everything that we've said so far has been published in mainstream news, like all the stuff that we're talking about. You know, the conspiracies, the 84 people that control the thing, the pharmaceutical interests and everything. This is stuff you read in Reuters or The Guardian, This and we get called crazy for talking about it. What are you talking about, bro? We got it from your sources of information. You're doing it so blatant, so out in the open, that it's this easy to expose you. But because it's so hard to believe, because it challenges your reality, because it makes people have a moral obligation to get off their ass and actually do something about it, to actually change their lives for the better, to actually serve their community instead of only serving themselves, which is what they've been programmed to do pretty much since they started school. Be popular, be wealthy, that kind of thing. No, It's about doing the right thing. It's about fitting in. It's about having a purpose in life. And if that purpose is being robbed from you by ruthless criminal sociopaths and the people around you don't see it, then you personally, the person who does see it, have an obligation to do something about it and inform people about it as quickly as humanly possible before the final plans are actually put into place where you no longer have a choice. And thanks to our beautiful GCSB and SIS, State Intelligence Security Services, all the doctors who protest and know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to criticizing this bill can be legally surveilled, harassed, and maybe even arrested indefinitely and put in detention camps. You know, they've got the power to do this now. Whether or not they will do it is a question of whether or not the public would react and actually defend these people if they tried.
There are draconian search and seizure provisions in the Natural Health Products Bill that are more suited to, police methods, really. And there's also a bill clause in there which says if you've been unfairly treated, you can't go to a court to get justice. And there's another clause in there that says, you know, after all the kerfuffle, that really the authority should be doing this and this and this. But then it says there's a little clause slipped in that says, in reality, the authority can decide to do whatever it likes for whatever reason it wants to. So you have a bill that, dare I say it, is similar to the bill to control the Jewish population passed in 1935, which, if you read it, is a very innocuous sounding bill. It just simply says that there's a new authority. It's been set up. The purpose of the authority is to deal with the Jewish question. And here we have a bill which has been set up, which says basically we're setting up a new authority and it is empowered to do whatever it wants to control natural health products. And it's already set about doing some pretty extraordinary things, even though the bill hasn't actually been passed for several months now. The MedSafe has been busy setting up a pretty draconian system of controlling natural health products as if they were dangerous when they're absolutely not dangerous in any way whatsoever.
Well, the danger is, in fact, in regulating them. Access to your own health and the choice of your own health is akin to having freedom, right? And privacy, the same thing. And this bill will simultaneously kill both.
It's interesting. A few years ago, not very many years ago, we cut off our links to the Privy Council. And the Privy Council in England came under common law. Common law came out of the Magna Carta. And the Magna Carta is a document that recognizes the supremacy of truth and the supremacy of fairness. And the courts in England saw, and still do, see their role as protecting natural justice. And when we cut off our links to the Privy Council, we really fell back on our situation here in New Zealand on our own, which, probably sounded quite good, actually. But the fact of the matter is that we don't have a constitution. We're one of two countries in the world that don't have a constitution. And the constitutional principle that is governing our governance here is that Parliament is supreme. And the courts, traditionally in New Zealand, because of this link to the Privy Council, where there was always that kind of last link to common law, simply do not see their role in challenging Parliament. So Parliament here could pass a law tomorrow that says everyone is to refer to black as white and white as black, and we would have to do it, and the courts would have to support them because that's how our constitutional arrangements here are. So there's no supremacy of matters of fact, and there's no concept of fairness or justice built into our judicial and parliamentary system. And this is a huge defect in our system. And that's why a regulatory bill like this, which simply says someone can do whatever they like, is a very dangerous kind of bill. It's more suited to a dictatorship. It's extraordinary that we're passing these kind of laws, which are taking away things that we thought were our rights. But our Bill of Rights, we do have a Bill of Rights, it's rather weak. And also the courts that deal with the Bill of Rights are solely advisory. The government is not obliged if you win a case over the Bill of Rights, the government is not advised to do anything about it. So this is a, you know, quite a unique system here, and one that is really not in people's favor.
So let me get this right. You know, most people think Magna Carta is a kind of wood. Now,
she's doing a lot here, actually.
I mean, you know, so here's what we do. We go, okay, we've got all this common law about, you know, the non-aggression principle and all of that kind of stuff is really, really good, and not being tyrannical and not being a thing. So what we do is we take that ability away from a country that doesn't have any constitution, and we replace it with a Supreme Court for an $8 million court building for to house eight judges, two of which are a husband and wife. And out of the 126 high court judges that we have in this country, about 84 of them are first cousin related. Right. So that's a really good idea. Especially because we have a parliamentary sovereign dictatorship where the prime minister gets to handpick his entire cabinet to handle all the government's portfolios and make himself the tourism minister, as well as, you know, the finance minister or whatever he wants, right? And at the same time, because the parliament is sovereign, you can't bind any succeeding government after you from not passing certain laws, like against your rights, for example, because you got no freaking constitution to bind them either.
No, you're, you know, and what is the protection against this? As Thomas Jefferson said, is the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. You have to be really in this kind of situation where we're sort of floating way out there. Really, we haven't got a lot of anchors down to protect our rights. You have to be vigilant. You have to actually be awake. And when a bill like this comes up, you actually have to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, the emperor doesn't have any clothes. This is entirely wrong. You've overstepped the bounds of what is reasonable. And you have to be prepared to get out there and do something about it. You can't remain silent. Again, I'm going back to the Jewish situation, because they remained silent. They thought, this is terrible, of course, but they felt very vulnerable. They felt afraid, and they didn't do anything about it. They kind of thought, well, it'll all go away, but things don't go away. And in fact, if you look historically, when you come to social change and movements connected with rights, the people who win are the people who are persistently defending their rights and who are prepared to go for the long term. And in order to defend their rights, if you simply sit back and you remain silent and you say, well, I've got, you know, yeah, come and see me later. I'm going to the movies tonight. So, you know, it's not something I really want to deal with. If we in that situation, then you're actually opening yourself to be you're exposing yourself to forces that you really don't want to control your life. You have to be active in promoting what you know is right. I always feel this, you know, you've been talking about people who want to control other people. I think, you know, this is my personal philosophy. I think there are moments in your life when you are faced with choices, and the choice is you can do something that you know is wrong for some particular kind of gain, or you can do what you know is right in yourself. And if you then decide to do what you know is wrong, you debase yourself and you debase your way of thinking. And in fact, you sort of join the opposition, if you like. And those are crucial moments in life. Everybody faces them. Absolutely everybody has those moments of choice when they have to decide whether they're going to adhere to what they know is right, or they're going to do what they know is wrong.
There's a number of steps along that path I've found. I think that if you mindlessly take that first step, and if you begin to passively support evil, if you tell yourself little lies and things like that, it just starts rolling and rolling and rolling. So it's a very interesting documentary done by the BBC about dishonesty. And they did a whole bunch of experiments. And one of the two experiments that stood out to me was particularly interesting. One, where they had one person get up after a really hard test that they've got 5 minutes to do, and it would take you an hour to do, right? So it's impossible to finish the test, right? One person gets up after 5 seconds, okay, and says, all right, I've finished the test, you know, and he goes up and he says, I got all the answers correct, and does it loud enough for everybody in the class to hear him, and then they pay him money, and then he walks out. And you'll find that the dishonesty level of all the other people starts to go up and up and up, and other people start turning in forged answers and lying and taking the money and that kind of thing. And the second experiment, which I found was even more interesting, they got people to, before the test began, same principles as the last test, but with one thing that they did beforehand, which was try to write down as many of the Ten Commandments as they could remember, right? Uh-huh. And nobody could remember a single commandment, and they even invented some very interesting ones. But when they took the test, nobody lied on it, and nobody got up early, nobody took extra money and stuff like that for the test conditions. Now, it is not the Ten Commandments, it's an example of what the idea of the Ten Commandments initially was. It's because everybody knows what the general idea is. Don't be a dick, right? And so if you sit there and you remind yourself, don't be a dick, don't be a dick, and then you get the opportunity to be a dick, you don't, right? And it's the same thing with Parliament, it's the same thing with the police, it's the same thing with schools or whatever. If the dishonest and terrible people around us aren't called out and exposed and shown a better way, if you don't actually be an example of honesty and integrity in your everyday life, just for all the people around you to see, then they're going to move in a dishonest direction. And that's what the eternal vigilance thing is, because I found that being honest has cost me dearly. Very, very many times I have lost a lot of opportunities because I was honest. You know, I wasn't willing to lie and take the money. I wasn't willing to, lie to myself and allow myself to enjoy this thing that I wanted, you know, because I knew it was wrong and I couldn't do it. And it occurred to me that that's what the measure of a good person is, not what they'll mindlessly charge into doing, but what they will very carefully stop themselves from doing.
You have to be awake. You have to be awake, and you have to row your boat. And I believe in karma. I mean, my undergraduate training was in theoretical physics. The whole universe is set up in a balanced way. As you sow, so shall you reap, is just as much as every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's how the universe is set up. So you actually set your whole life up by what you do, how you act, how you think even. And that's what you have control over. It's a philosophy, actually, that people don't sort of appreciate so much these days. Philosophy of karma, you know, it's in every religion, it's in every science. But it's true, it's there. You know, and they have this saying in Ayurveda, Satyam Eva Jayate, it's in Sanskrit. It means truth alone triumphs. And truth is something that is very, very important. And of course, you know, again, going back to the wars, truth in politics was something that, you know, that greatly disappeared during the wars because of propaganda. You know, it was considered important in the First World War and even more in the Second World War to control the kind of information that went to the public. And people set up, you know, ministries of propaganda that would actually tell things that weren't true to the population in the hope that they would be more enthusiastic about what was going on. But that continued after the war. The control of information and the right of people to say things which weren't true has persisted. And it's become a hallmark of politics, actually.
Yes.
that truth doesn't matter. But truth really matters, because that is at the fundamental of your mental health.
Really? I mean, who was it that told me this? I forget who it was. He said, half the reason why I'm honest is because I don't have to remember anything. Because if I forget something that I'm supposed to remember, I can say, I can't remember. I'm just honest about it. Whereas if you're a bullshit artist, you've got to remember all these lies that you've got to tell. And then if those ones get exposed, then you've got to come up with all new ones. And then you've got to remember those ones too. And you've also got to dispel the other ones by telling different lies to hide the other lies that you told before. And it's like being a prime minister. But do you wonder why these people look like they age so fast? Okay. Have you ever seen the pictures where they have people who are meth addicts, you know, and they say, here's 10 years earlier, and they're like young and pretty and happy and all of that kind of stuff, and then here's 10 years later on meth, and they look like they're 80, right? And then you see John Key at the start of his prime ministership, and then you see him today, man, the guy looks like he's been working in the salt mines for like 6,000 years, like honestly, bro, he's just not looking well. And that's what dishonesty and scumbaggery and psychopathy will do to you if you have to do it all the time, right? I think that John Key even lies while he's asleep, you know? He just lies in bed.
It's also a reflection on society, you know, what we're prepared to accept. You know, politicians give us what we're prepared to accept. And, you know, we have to up our standards here in society if we're going to expect a better government. And that's, yeah, that's something we have to work at. It's something to do with the failure of education. If you know, education actually gives us the future leaders, and if our leadership is deficient in some way, then it must be that our educational system is deficient in some way. And if you look at education, then it's very object referral. It has to do with objects. And facts, but actually, you know, there's a whole lot more to life. As we've been discussing, there are these factors over which we have control. We have control over our food, our behavior, our experience, and our consciousness. And all these four elements need to be in education.
Mm. A successful politician tells people what he thinks they're prepared to accept, but a good politician will tell people what they have to accept if there's going to be any actual change.
Well, another element of you know, politics is it's very short term. You know, it only looks to the next election. There's an interesting book out. Someone was telling me about memoirs of Congressman X, which has just come out in the US or just in the process of coming out. And basically he's describing what goes on as a congressman. And it's a real congressman writing his memoirs. And he said that he never bothers to read any of the bills. He relies on his staff to do that. And as he leaves to take the vote, to cast his vote, then he just asks them, well, which way do you want me to vote? Because he said, my whole time as a congressman has been taking up raising money to fund the campaign for my next in the next election that I'll face. And you do need an element of long-termism in politics. You need people who have a long-term view of the nation, as well as people who are there because they have managed to somehow convince the popular vote. And there are perhaps, you know, of course we don't have royalty here. You know, we do have a queen here. You know, we admire the queen and everything like that. But, you know, I think there are elements of society that do have long-term views. There are, you know, distinguished and scientists and distinguished educators, perhaps, who could play a greater role in government in the sense of having a long-term view of the future of the nation. There are distinguished ecologists and environmentalists who take a long-term view, and the opinion of these people should count in government. What we're looking at here is, and I always think that, yeah, one of the great things about New Zealand is that we have this, sense of being fair. We have a sense of a fair go, and we have a sense, due to our history of working together, of hanging together. We're a long way away from many of us. hour long way away from where we came from. And so we've had to hang together, and we don't want that to disappear, because that is really the hallmark of civilization, is a caring people who have a vision for the future, who have vision for the future generations. And that's something that we have in spades here.
I think we should protect it. I do think so. Now, ladies and gentlemen, bear in mind this is a listener-supported broadcast of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm interviewing Guy Hatchard, and we're talking about the Natural Products Regulation Bill, the pseudo-codex alimentarius scumbaggery bill in other nomenclature. Now, we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you go anywhere. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and start donating monthly today. If you like this kind of media that doesn't bullshit you and work for the pharmaceutical fucking company. All right, we'll be right back.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotics.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Do you know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Got no steel industry left. Can't educate our young people. Can't get health care to our old people. Now, you probably noticed I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war, the way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. You see, I tell you, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. Nope. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them. I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.
You stumbled across the second hour of the Vinny Eastwood show. I hope you don't take it too seriously, man. Vinny certainly doesn't. So sit back, enjoy the complimentary GMO marijuana and fluoridated surface, and embrace the probability of your imminent death. Now here's your host, the Chicano from the North Island, Vinny Eastwood.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. A couple nights a week for your listening displeasure. Those of you who don't tune into the show because you don't like your worldviews being changed by the addition of additional contrary information. That means that half the life that you think that you've been living has actually been a complete farce and a lie that you've been telling yourself for years. And only now, if you start listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, you start to realise, like I did, and like all intelligent people do, that you don't know everything. And you never will. And that there is never a reason to stop wanting to know more. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today, because although these are very dark times, we can deliver some dark comedy to counterspell that shit. You know, it's just a coping mechanism. If you've ever talked to surgeons, they have some of the dirtiest, most horrific kinds of humor imaginable, because they do some of the most horrific, traumatizing work imaginable. And thus, a sense of humour is absolutely necessary in that environment to maintain one's sanity. Unless, of course, they're simply a sociopath and they're just doing it because they actually love to. And statistically speaking, if you have the letters MD after your name, you're 11 times more likely to be a serial killer. Just a little factoid to make you feel a little bit more comfortable when you go to the doctor when you're next sick. Okay, now, my very special guest is Guy Hatchard. Guy, welcome back.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Guy. Now,
this whole situation in New Zealand, this is because we talk to an international audience on the show on a regular basis, an international guest, etc. It has occurred to me that the importance of New Zealand in a global sense is actually really significant. Like, some of the changes that happen here set precedence for legislation that winds up getting passed elsewhere. And vice versa, right? So in order to figure out what the agenda of your own country is, you can often look at other countries and how similar types of legislation have been enacted and find out that there's actually a long chain of events. Like, this stuff didn't just pop out of the blue. They've had committee meetings on this. They've had a hell of a lot of input over a long period of time to create general policies that wind up getting filtered through, and step by step, little by little, the jackboot comes down and forces away everybody's freedoms and forces an amalgamation of a global system that's controlled at a central level, right? That seems to just be the general trend in all the major industries. Even the police now, I think, are becoming more militaristic, I think. There's more call for officers in New Zealand to be armed, even though about 75 to 80% of officers don't want to be armed and don't think they need them.
It's definitely part of a harmonization of regulations that's occurring all over the world. And interesting, thinking of other countries, there's a huge contrast between the bill which is attempted to be passed here, which has gone through its second reading, So it's not quite law yet. And look at some other countries. I was just looking at the Deshaies Act in America, and the Deshaies Act is really a liberal law when it comes to natural health products. And in the preamble to the bill, they say, for example, I'm reading here, there is a link between the ingestion of certain nutrients or dietary supplements and the prevention of chronic diseases such as cancer, heart disease, and osteoporosis. And clinical research has shown that several chronic diseases can be prevented simply with a healthful diet, such as a diet that is low in fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, and sodium, with a high proportion of plant-based foods. And then it goes on to explain in the preamble that this is something that is really good for people's health, for the economy of the country. It protects people to be able to take the choices that they want to take. And of course, there is a move in the United States to modify the Deshaies Act in many ways and make it far more restrictive. And we don't need that kind of restriction. Because
that'll be known as the Touchet Act. But go ahead.
Correct. That's what it will be known as. There's a right here to deal with plant-based material, and that's a God-given right. Whether you believe in God or whether you say you believe in nature or whether you believe in the supremacy of man, it's still true that this is part of our heritage. The plant kingdom is there to provide health. In fact, it even goes back to Henry VIII. Henry VIII passed a herbalist charter in 1533. And in 1503, he passed a law kind of authorizing doctors or physicians to practice their trade and become registered. But he was interested in herbal medicine. He used it himself. And he became frustrated, and therefore he passed this law called the Herbalist Charter, and I could just read a small part of it. Whereas most physicians have small skills, yet they will take great sums of money and do little for it. And as a result, they do oftentimes impair and hurt their patients. In consideration whereof, and for the ease, comfort, succor, help, relief, and health of the king's subjects who are now pained or diseased, be it proclaimed that for all time it shall be lawful for every person being the king's subject, having knowledge and experience of the nature of herbs, roots, waters, through research or practice within any part of the king's dominions, to practice, use, and minister to any sore, wounds, tumors, swelling, disease, any herbs, ointments, baths, poultice, or plasters according to their skill, experience, and knowledge in any of the diseases, or to provide concoctions for kidney stones, urinary infections, or fevers without suffering any suit, vexation, trouble, penalty, or loss of their goods from anyone else. So basically, this goes right back, and this is still actually on the statute books in 13 states in America. It goes right back to that point at which people realized it was a right to practice herbal medicine.
Well, under the when you're in the king's dominion, it is. But conveniently, they had a revolution, and so the Rockefellers took over instead. You know, it's just
you have to defend these rights. You know, they are, as I say, they are, you know, they're part of our natural heritage, and this affects all kinds of people. I'm thinking of older people now who are in retirement homes, and my father-in-law went into a retirement home here, and of course, like many older people, he'd ended up with a huge long list of pharmaceutical drugs that he was taking, and I was very concerned about his health. And I met a doctor here in New Zealand, Dee Mangan, who's working at in Dunedin, and she's published papers. She's internationally known, but actually what she's found, if you take elderly people and you cease all their medication under supervision, of course, they generally get better because of all the mutual interactions of all these drugs. So there's a great deal of evidence that, you know, we need to change our whole medical approach, actually. We need to focus more on diet. And one of the things that this natural health products do, act is seeking to do, is really limit our ability to do that. And why is it that the whole pharmaceutical mountain has arisen? And you often hear these randomized controlled trials that medicines are really safe because of randomized controlled trials.
And the evidence that they throw into the trash bin, as happened with the whistleblower who came out about the link between autism and vaccines. He said that the CDC, their research team, actually got all the data and then threw it in a bin and then declared publicly that there was no link.
Yes. And actually, there's very few laws that can prevent that kind of thing happening. There's definitely that happening. There's evidence getting suppressed. But there's another fundamental flaw with this whole approach, because a randomized control trial only looks at one or two outcomes. So, you know, what you're essentially saying is, I believe that this is the particular thing that we're looking at here. We need to know whether this particular symptom is affected by this particular drug. And just let's say, for for the sake of argument, that the whole study is done fairly and reported fairly, which doesn't seem to be happening, but still, let's say we did that. The thing is that there are a whole nother range of outcomes that could possibly happen that that study has not looked at. And that's where we get this phenomenon where drugs come up, they come onto market, and then suddenly people realize that the side effects are really a lot more horrendous than they initially thought as soon as it's used. And then it disappears, and then some new drug comes up. And there's this regulatory creep, which has meant that drugs with even more frightening side effects are tending to get approved these days. Now let's look at traditional use. Traditional use, wide-scale use of a substance is really what proves whether it's safe. And that's what you have with traditional medicine. Traditional herbal medicine has been used for thousands of years. It's known to be safe because it has been used safely for thousands of years. Now, so these random... And what this bill is partly saying is that really... you ought to be doing randomized control trials instead. not what, you know, they're basically saying, oh, all this old stuff, that really doesn't count. What we want is modern stuff. We want randomized control trials. But they're trials that actually haven't worked and don't work because they don't look at the whole range of life.
Mm. And also the trials that do work fall within the 30% effectiveness range, which is also the equal effectiveness range of the placebo effect. So yeah, the drug only worked because the person really believed that it would.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means that drugs 70% of the time will hurt or kill you if you take them. And 30% of the time, you are what helps you, not the drug. Okay, so these are marketed bioweapons that are created to manifest disease in the host patient, the cattle, as it were. And when the cow gets sick, the cow comes back to you for another piece of medication to add on to the existing piece of medication. Now, if the cattle has any resources or any finances or something of that nature, because the cow feels threatened, its life is going into disarray and things like that, it'll often abandon its reasoning processes and frontal lobe activity, etc., and it will merely march itself onward towards the slaughter with a much lighter wallet as it gets skinnier and more deformed and more dead towards the end. It's a milking process essentially for the cattle and the rest of us. And I found that having this dehumanization view of other people is the only reason why a doctor can sit there, prescribe something that he knows, or if he investigated he would know, is going to hurt or kill his patient, okay? If you can dehumanize others, you can rob yourself of that social responsibility. Now, I mentioned in the first hour about these processes that grease the slopes of evil, right? And it was taken off a presentation by the guy who actually performed the Milgram study. the study where they had students dress up and play prisoners and guards, and they found that the guards started to abuse really heavily the people who played the prisoners, and they got into this whole different role of things, right? It was really horrible that they had to actually call it off. And the female psychiatrist that told Mr. Milgram to call it off, he goes, you know, you're right, and he called off the experiment, and then he married her. It's a very cute story, eh? And so this is the panel that says, the seven social processes that grease the slippery slope of evil. Number one, mindlessly taking the first small step. Dehumanizing of others. De-individuation of self, making yourself more anonymous, like you're wearing a uniform, one form, so take away your own personal expression of how you look and that kind of thing, like they do in... in the military as well, they take off everybody's hair and make them all bald so that they are no longer individuals, right, by the look of it. Diffusion of personal responsibility. Well, I'm just following orders. They told me to do it, you know, that kind of thing. And that way you don't have to actually have any feeling of guilt or consequences for your own actions when you're doing terrible things. Blind obedience to authority. Well, this is what the Ministry of Health says. This is what the government says. This is what the Associate Minister of Health, Peter Dunn, who's kept cannabis illegal as one of his requirements for the last fucking decade and a half. Oh, my God. If you've got like 116 different illnesses that can be helped and or cured with medical quality cannabis, why would you keep it illegal? It's insane. Right, anyway. Continuing on that note, uncritical conformity to group norms, like saying, hey, it's illegal, it's the law. And lastly, passive tolerance of evil through inaction or indifference. Oh, I don't care, it doesn't affect me, I don't take natural health products, you know, that kind of, see?
Well, that's something, you know, but people will be, you know, people, what I say to people when they say, well, it doesn't really affect me, I say, well, actually, at some point in everybody's life, they face illness. You know, now, when I was young, one in seven people, men, and about one in six women, would have mental illness. The present statistics are almost half of the population will face a diagnosable mental illness in their life. And, you know, so there's been a huge explosion in chronic disease. About half of the population suffer from chronic or incurable disease. And about half of the population will suffer from mental illness at some time or another. And it's those times when you turn around and you say, well, wait a minute, how am I going to deal with this? I've got this problem, if you do recognize that it is a problem. And then you're going to have to work out how you're going to deal with it. So everybody has got an interest in natural health products. 50% of the population now take natural health products. It's not a fringe thing at all. But even if you think you're perfectly healthy, there are times when you need health. And food is our number one medicine. Food, because these natural health products are nothing other than food. And the whole idea of the synergy of herbs, you know, herbs are by herbalists, by Ayurvedic physicians, by Chinese experts in Chinese medicine, they combine herbs. They have a knowledge of combining herbs into multi-ingredient products that will, you know, help the whole body system, its immunity to cope with an illness, so that they... yeah, that is what is useful, and it's nothing different from the concept of a balanced meal. We know that you have to have a balanced meal. You have to have a bit of this and a bit of that, and then you get all your nutrients and your proteins and fats and cofactors of digestion and vitamins and minerals and so on. These natural health products, multi-ingredient, are hugely effective. There's been some great research on how they have helped people with serious illness to overcome it quite easily. And it's these particular products that are affected by these highly restrictive rules within these natural health products bills that they're trying to pass all around the world. Because it would just take one ingredient of a traditional multi-ingredient product to be banned, as many are being banned. Then you're lost because you can't produce the traditional formula. So these are the things that are disappearing from the shelf. And why are they disappearing from the shelf? This is really interesting. A few years ago, there's a very effective herb in India called neem. And an American company tried to patent neem, the genetic structure of neem, and its whole formula, because it is so good for health. It's used externally and internally. It deals with ulcers and things like that. But it has several uses. Neem is one of our most powerful herbs, and they failed to patent it because it's a plant. The judge ruled that you can't patent a plant. So that was a bit of a setback, really, for a plan to take over natural medicine, because part of the kind of pharmaceutical model and the big food model is that you need to have some kind of commercial protection, a patent. Now, what's happening now is a completely different approach to the whole concept of patenting, and that is through control of natural health products. This is how it works. A medicine is developed as a result of research on a plant. So all over the world, the pharmaceutical companies are doing an enormous amount of research on plants. And they're discovering, they're breaking them up into their parts, they're taking out alkaloids, and they're trying to develop new medicines. And they're missing the point because it's a whole plant, but nevertheless, they are developing medicines. And then they're registering the medicines with the medical authorities. And then, and here's the trick, they're saying, we developed this from the plant. They didn't actually use the plant. They just looked at it and researched it, and then they did something chemical that was somewhat similar. And they're saying, because we developed this medicine, you ought to be restricting the plant. And governments are doing this, and there's no patent involved. So you can't challenge a patent because they don't actually have a patent, but they have what amounts to a patent. It's a backdoor patent. They have registered a medicine and restricted the use of a plant. And in the bill that's coming in New Zealand, there are over 300 traditional herbs, Chinese and Indian herbs, that I have identified that have been restricted in this way.
Now, that also brings me to the food bill as well, right? It was kind of like how many people died from pharmaceutical side effects or complications to do with the medical industry in, I think it was 2011, the year about the time that the food bill was being proposed. It was about 6,000 New Zealanders who got killed by the Ministry of Health in some way during that year. And the amount of people that died from food-related illnesses and things of that, 6. So, do they regulate the sale of really dangerous medicines and things of that nature in order to protect the public, or do they regulate the sale of food so that people can't grow it themselves and that the people who are mega agribusiness, for example, can now hire private security and be able to raid your property for you sharing seeds or growing your own vegetables and things of this nature, right? And if people think I'm joking, this has already happened in the United States. Gun-drawn raids on health shops that are selling raw milk. Like, seriously, put down that gallon of milk. Put it down! These people are freaking nuts, all right? Now, I don't know about you, but I also found out that under the food bill, those people that you can hire private security for, did you know Monsanto bought Blackwater, which then changed its name to Zed, private security? Do you know what those people are? Do you know like what a war crime is? Do you know what rolling around, tripping balls on acid, naked, in a Humvee with a 50 caliber machine gun, shooting up the main streets in Baghdad looks like? Go ask the people who work at Blackwater. They know, because they're the experts. They've done it! And now those people will be able to come onto your property. And here's the kicker. Immunity from all forms of prosecution as well. So exactly the same thing that you're saying that this natural health product bill will give to the pharmaceutical companies. The food bill is giving those exact same kind of powers to big agribusiness, right? And the shares that are owned in those companies, if you boil them down, they're actually owned by pretty much the same people anyway. So it's the whole gamut of controls over everything. This is why people don't see it, is because if somebody's trying to control you in 100 different ways, and you can only focus on one sort of element of control of, over your life at a time, it means that 99 different things will come through a day that you don't have time to deal with, right? And I found that that's the biggest problem as an activist. That's the biggest problem as a journalist. That's the biggest problem as somebody who's ever critical of government or corporate tyranny of any kind, is that they're committing so much scumbaggery on a daily basis that it's like trying to catch a wave with a bucket.
It's true. I'm not laughing in, I'm laughing at the audacity of it, really, the audacity of, attempts to control water, attempts to control food. It comes back to yourself, it's being true to yourself. You have control over action alone, never over its fruits. So you could, in your life, you control your actions. But there's another kind of way to deal with this, actually, because there is a large amount of rage that can get generated. And you can also feel really sad if you really care about things. I mean, very, very sad. Another way of looking at this is that, a man may have 100 bad qualities, but he may have one good quality. And everybody is a mixture of good and bad. If you pay attention, how do you become a leader in this situation in the world? You can pay attention to the good quality, and that can grow. So yeah, everybody deserves praise for something. So when a person takes a step in the right direction, you have to give them credit for doing it. That's very, very important.
Positive reinforcement.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's the great part of psychology, really. Psychiatry is basically, giving positive reinforcement to what is positive and enabling people to break out of their, the cages that they've caged themselves in by, opening doors, really, to what's good in their life. And that's...
That's an example to illustrate that you can take. Like my wife this morning, she got under a certain weight that she'd been trying to break for years. And for years she'd been eating junk food here or there or whatever. And I just said to her, baby, you've got to start researching. You've got to start looking into these things, all right? And as she started researching, as she started watching YouTube videos about all these people trying all these different diets and everything like that, she's actually really starting to make progress. And what she always used to say is, well, I'm trying. And she'd get really angry with me. And this morning she's very proud of herself and she's very happy. And she goes, well, I'm trying. And I go, no, you're not trying anymore. Trying was what you were doing. Now you're actually doing it.
Yeah.
There's
a great book out called The Prime by Dr. Kulreet Chowdhury. It's a bestseller in the United States. It's she's a neurologist. She's a top neurologist, medical doctor in San Diego, and she herself got sick and started taking the medication that she was prescribing for other people. And then when she found out what the side effects were like and what her life had become taking the drugs that she'd been giving to people for years, she realized that she had to somehow get back to her roots. She had Indian roots. She
looked like turmeric roots and various other kinds of,
Yeah. Well, she looked back into, what her grandfather used to do for health and what they had on the kitchen table, and took these principles out of Ayurveda. And she completely turned her life around. And now she has changed her whole practice into dealing with people primarily with diet, and has had enormous success with people with diseases like multiple sclerosis and other neurological-based diseases, and published a book about it. And one of the interesting things that she said was that when she was kind of changing her whole medical practice, which is a thriving medical practice, by the way, especially since she's adopted this natural approach. Her colleagues took her aside and they said, wait a minute, Colreed, this is, you're never going to make any money like this. She's all very well to be focusing on getting people healthy, but that's not our business model. And you are actually giving up your future in medicine by changing your practice in this way. And it reminded me of what I experienced here in New Zealand when in about 2000, I went to the Ministry of Health to talk to them about research on natural approaches to prevention and healthcare. And I present, you know, it was a couple of hours. I was presenting to a large committee, maybe 10 or 15 people there within the Ministry of Health who had to do with new programs, new approaches. And I presented the results of, in summary, over some 600 studies and was able to show that there could be huge gains in public health, big reductions in the number of doctor visits, reductions in many categories of illness. And it wasn't just me presenting. There was a medical doctor there, another medical doctor there with me. And then after the meeting, the chairman of the committee took me aside and he said, you know, Guy, he said, we're never going to do this, he said, because if we do this, doctors' incomes will go down. And you could say that that was the moment when I became an activist, in the sense that you're up against the kind of thinking where, as we said earlier on, where people have taken a choice to go down a road that doesn't go anywhere, that's a wrong road. It doesn't lead anywhere other than self-interest at the expense of others. And that's not even self-interest, actually, because if you take those kind of decisions, the kind of life that you live, the kind of mental life that you have is definitely not what it should be.
It's if you deny your own place in the universe, and I think the universe is just a way of explaining God without having to explain what a macro organism is, that you're a part of one cell in a greater being, kind of like my cells are part of me, the much greater being than them, you know. Red blood cell, I'm Vinnie Eastwood, for fuck's sake. Anyway, what happens to one affects the other. What happens to my body will affect the cells within me, and what happens to me affects the organism that I'm a part of, probably the Earth, you know, maybe even down the fractal a little bit, just my society, or maybe even down the fractal a little bit more, just my neighbourhood, or even down a little bit more, just the people that live near me and are in my life. Everything that I do affects them, and everything they do affects me, right? In some small way, shape, or form, or it all gets contributed into the little whirlpool that we call society. Now, if society's only value is money, we get what we have now, a place where people aren't valued, when in reality, the only thing that's actually ever had true value, but ironically it's a value you can't calculate until it's gone. You can't really appreciate how much worth it had until it's just not there anymore. And that's people, isn't it? It's the only thing of value. And you don't know how these things will be affected once somebody's there not to fight these issues for you anymore. And it's kind of like how politicians would lose their job if they solved a problem, right? Because their job is crisis management, to make it keep going around and around and around. And unless we see that sort of little BS agenda, it will keep going round. It's like the shock doctrine. Now, I don't know if anybody's really heard of this. It's a very interesting concept whereby after an area has had a earthquake or something real bad and terrible happen, it's a perfect opportunity for people to come in and start proposing their own solutions, which will take all your freedoms off you and then impose their own way of life upon you. It's happened in places like Haiti, where a whole bunch of mining contracts got given to people who donated to the Clinton Foundation right after a whole bunch of US ships that just happened to be full of supplies came in and took care of these wonderful little Haitian people who are still living in tents, right? Now, that's how it works. And when it comes down to it, in terms of food and nutrition, one of the elements that I think is not really being understood by people, and the reason why natural supplements is actually so important, is because the intensive farming practices that humanity has been using to create more food than we need, that like we chuck around 30% of our food, right, has actually made the soil so depleted in the base nutrients and minerals that the food that we eat for a large part to get our nutrition from doesn't even have any nutrition in it, or you'd need to eat 10 times as much as you think you would. Now,
that's right.
That is why you need the supplements, because there's very little nutrition to be had in the food. That's why supplements are becoming a really big business, because I think maybe the smarter people have started to realize that this food's just not going to do it for me anymore. All right. It's not quite enough, you know? What is it? If you want to feel a buzz, you have two beers, right? If you don't want to have a buzz, you have one beer, right? And it's the same for your health. If you want to just, you know, act like you're trying to be healthy, eat nice. But if you actually want to be healthy, you're going to have to start supplementing, and you're going to have to start thinking about herbs and really intensive nutrition and superfoods and a whole lot of complex stuff that is not something you will learn after watching one 90-minute documentary. It's not something you'll learn after reading one self-help book, okay? It is a lifetime of practice. That's why they call it a doctor's practice.
Look, this especially affects children, and that's a huge issue. You know, the incidence of mental illness among children over the last 20 years has increased as much as 35 times. It's huge. Things like ADHD are symptomatic of what's going on, very high incidence of that, and bipolar disorder, and so on and so forth. And a lot of this is connected with nutrition. And people are working in this field. Here in New Zealand, in Christchurch, we have Dr. Julia Rutledge, who is treating ADHD with nutrition, basically high doses of nutritional supplements, and making huge progress. And as a result of the Natural Health Products Bill, the Ministry of Health tried to shut her down, even though she's doing research, funded research, in a university, that she's got permission to do that research. She has the ethical permission satisfied and got permission from the Ministry of Health. They said, well, wait a minute. You know, after her research had been going on some time and papers were published and very successful, wait a minute, you're using too much natural health products. That's not good. So she sort of challenged them and said, vitamin D, for example, people were having fairly high dose of vitamin D, and they said, oh, no, that's not good. And she said, well, why not? And after a while, they dug up a paper from 1938 involving 10 subjects and said, now this paper shows that children shouldn't have more than this amount of vitamin D. And she said, well, actually, there's a paper published in 2012 involving 30,000 children in Finland where they have the same dose that I'm using, and they all benefited greatly. So people here are out of date. And you're absolutely right. There is a need for nutrition, and that does have to do with the huge growth in processed food industry. Processed food does not have the same level of nutrition as a plant-based diet. And, of course, there are a lot of reasons for that. And, you know, people are busy. They're, you know, mother goes out to work. People don't have time to get meals, and they don't necessarily have the money to buy the ingredients, which have got very expensive. And so there are all kinds of things that the government needs to look at. These are preventive things that instead of pouring money into controlling natural health products so they can gift a commercial advantage to a small number of large companies, they need to look at preventive methods of improving health. And they need to take care. It comes back to these four areas that we need to look at. We need to look at the food. We need to look at the behavior, the experience, and consciousness. Consciousness is very important here. Meditation, again, a lot of research showing that ADHD and other childhood conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, you know, these things never used to occur in children. Diabetes, hypertension, ADHD, anxiety, but these kind of things just kids didn't suffer from. They are now. They are greatly helped by transcendental meditation, research shows, and they are greatly helped by nutrition. And these the elements of natural health practitioners use. People use exercise. They give people advice about, you know, going to bed on time, how much water they may have in a day and when they might have it. And these are all simple things that everybody needs to be educated in, because there was a time when grandma, you know, had all this down, but the kind of society we live in, that kind of knowledge is lost. So we have to rediscover it, in a sense, reinvigorate it. We don't need to control it. We absolutely do not need to impose rigorous controls on people's choices for their health care and rigorous controls on traditional systems of medicine and knowledge and cultural values that have disappeared in the fast pace of modern life and all the threats to modern life that we have today. Mm. All the threats to traditional life, rather.
Yeah. Some people... What was I going to say about the last Great Depression, right? About 10 million people in the United States, which was the wealthiest country in the world at the time, starved to death. And that was at a time when 90% of people lived in rural areas and grew their own food, healed their own wounds and that kind of thing, and had a very small community base that were actually very lively because it was agricultural communities, etc. Today, 90% of people live in cities and don't grow their own food. So you can imagine what would happen if an economic depression struck today. How many people there would be on the streets starving to death because there's just not enough food being grown, right? On top of that, the food that is being grown currently is nutrient deficient. So even if they needed that food, all it would do is fill their belly, and it wouldn't give them the nutrients that they would need to fight off disease. And a small cough could just pick them off at a young age anyway. You know, you'll be back to the dark ages times, bro. And in terms of the meditation, I don't meditate. What I do is I make videos about people that I hate or I think are scum. I call it meditating, and these things that I focus on, like John Key or the Associate Minister of Health, Peter Dunn. And I was very inspired by this story one time where they did this group meditation in Washington, D.C. It was the murder capital of the world, and still is to this day. I mean, of course, it's the United States. The president's around there. Can you imagine how much dark energy is being permeated throughout all the thing, and considering it's also the highest concentrations of Masonic lodges in the known world, and also is shaped with its streets in the diagram of a pentagon. So it's all totally coincidence, by the way. You know, there's no connection to the huge freaking murder rate and the amount of children that go missing because all the pedophile congressmen need their lusts to be satiated. Anyway, I digress. They did this 3,000 people meditation, and the goal of the meditation was to bring down the murder rate in Washington, D.C. by about 30%. Now, Washington, D.C. police chief comes out and he says, that's frickin' impossible. It would take 16 feet of snow to stop the murder rate by that significant amount by the time of now. So they did the meditation, and the murder rate dropped by exactly 30%. All right? Now, this gave me hope. That if I concentrate hard enough, I can get Peter Dunn's heart to stop. You know, just stop.
I think I'm familiar with that study. I'm involved. I practice transcendental meditation, and I've been involved with those kind of programs. And I worked for about 7 years with one in Merseyside, and it's startling how much influence meditation has on social values. There was not just on crime, but on a more economic activity, more happiness, reduced suicides, these kind of things. And why is that? Well, as a physicist, life is constructed in layers. And at every point in creation, you have the total energy and organizing power of the universe available. That's quantum mechanics. Is that original kind of force behind the Big Bang still exists everywhere at every point fully? You just have to go to the very small. You have to go to 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, the Planck scale, and then you come across the enormous energy of the universe. And that level of life is self-referral. It means that it doesn't need anything outside of itself. In mathematical terms, it means it's non-abelian. It creates from within itself. And because it's self-referral, it identifies itself as consciousness. It's awake. It deals only with itself. As we know, our awareness deals with itself. So meditation is about contacting and enlivening that kind of inherent organizing power that organizes evolution, balance, and that's why it has that effect. So it's actually a method of changing society by becoming silent. By becoming infinitely silent. And then when you get infinitely silent in your awareness, then you can become infinitely dynamic in what goes on outside of you. So those two things go together, rest and activity. And that's another principle of natural medicine. You find it everywhere. You find it in China. You find it in India. You find it in every movement that has ever sought to, you know, improve the quality of life. So silence and dynamism, that's what life is. And so you need both things.
And this is part of life, I think. It's always about people think that life is about duality, and it is and it isn't, all right? It is a duality, but it's not a duality that works one against the other, like the light against the dark. It's actually a revolving system where it becomes light and it becomes dark, it becomes light, it becomes dark, right? And right now we're just in dark times, and we're just bringing that to light. All right, that's the way it's working right now, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's the essence of alchemy, essentially, right? Matter itself. This is one of the great scientific principles that I don't think enough scientists understand, and they need to. Is that matter itself has consciousness, right? It can respond to influences and things like that, like the double slit experiment, for instance. They had two chamber slits, and they were shooting electron particles through it to a little aluminium background, and they found that when they weren't watching it being shot through the slots, it would create a ripple effect pattern of impacts on the back of the thing. It means that those individual particles changed into a wavelength because somebody wasn't looking. And the reason they know that it happened when they wasn't looking, because when they put a video monitor right in front of the slots to see if they could replicate that experiment, the electron particles went through the slots and hit the backboard just as they normally would, right? It meant that because we were watching it and expecting something to happen, it changed its behavior. And I remember when there was a big meeting with Kim.com and a huge amount of like really important people about the GCSB bill and state surveillance and all this fascism and everything. And I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I've been talking about this shit for years, and all these people are coming up and it's like, they say, okay, now you're not allowed to make any statements. And it was like, I was sitting there writing all these little statements and things like that based upon things that they'd said and yada. So I just had to throw the book out. And I felt like it was a hostile audience. Like, being a conspiracy theorist in a town hall meeting where a whole bunch of people are talking about a totalitarian surveillance state was coming over you, I actually felt uncomfortable. And I tried not to act like myself. I acted differently. I tried to act like one of them, and I fumbled my words and fucked it up. And I was like, man, I was the electron that was hitting the backboard and making a splash instead of the wavelength that was permeating and changing everything around me.
It's that it's interesting that you raise this whole point. Measurement theory is the whole, you know, is at the fundamental of physics, really. Consciousness plays a very important role in all events. And things, you know, collapse into this all possibilities and reemerge as specific events. And that is actually how everything happens. Everything happens through this interaction of the collapse into all possibilities and the emergence into specific events. And the key factor here is that, and you're absolutely right, that consciousness is at the basis of everything. And the question is, a technology, how to make use of that knowledge. Human consciousness is what makes use of that knowledge. And again, you look at every great culture, they had an understanding about consciousness. I taught in a Maori school a couple of years ago for a year. I had a fantastic experience of complete and total immersion in Maori culture. And I came to appreciate what a huge knowledge that they had about life. It was very interesting. They have the Napu, that's a tribe. They have a whakapapa of the world. That means a description of the origin of the universe.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about incest. Go.
and they... you know, when I read that, it had 40 verses in this description of how the universe comes about. And I was reading modern physics. They had a huge understanding. And they have a culture that has objective knowledge, but it has subjective knowledge as well. That's their natural learning ability. It is the subjective means of gaining knowledge. How did Kawati? Kawati was a great chief who invented trench warfare, essentially, and was very successful against the British when they tried to invade Maori territory.
Which is why they had to resort to using a treaty to enslave them.
Well, how did he do that? Well, it came out of his consciousness. He used to go into his hut, according to what people have told me, and then he would have a dream. He would have a vision of reality that came from within himself. And every great culture has that, and you have to preserve that. That has to be part of education, developing a person from within. And that's a very great part of natural healthcare, is the development of consciousness. And that should be more in education. It's fantastic to see the work of the David Lynch Foundation, for example, which is going on all around the world. David Lynch, you know, is the director who directed Twin Peaks and Mulholland Drive, and he has set up a foundation which helps students in schools, it helps returning veterans, it helps homeless people, it helps battered wives to rediscover themselves through meditation. Huge foundation, a hugely successful foundation, and it's a knowledge that we need. It's a knowledge of our times, actually.
Well, it is actually a very recent knowledge of our times, actually, because that's what CERN discovered, right? That's what the boson particles and all of that everything is. It's the God particle, and they've found out that it's us, right? Exactly the same basic components of everything that makes up the human body and human consciousness was contained within that particle. So they were searching outside themselves for something that was inside themselves the whole fucking time, which they completely ignored because they were looking for something outside themselves, right? That's what CERN actually discovered. It didn't make a black hole or anything like that. It just realized that they created a black hole for the money that was spent into something that you could have been looking for internally the whole fucking time.
That's
with a bit of quantum consciousness.
They have this concept in Ayurveda called pragyaparad. Pragyaparad means the mistake of the intellect. And the mistake of the intellect is actually to look outside of yourself for yourself, which is inside. And that is considered to be the fundamental of all disease, actually. It's the mistaken view of life. And that's why meditation is a very important part of Ayurveda, because it reconnects you with your inner self. And, you know, so there are, again, there are these different approaches that we have. We have herbal medicine, and we have behavior, how to handle your daily routine, your experience, how to manage your experience, because people have all kinds of experience that throw them off, and then how to manage yourself. Managing yourself is really actually the fundamental of life. It's the fundamental of and your choices, you know, how you have rest and activity in your life. That's what life is all about.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that has brought us to the end of the second hour. Guy Hatchett, ladies and gentlemen, has been my very special guest. Guy, do you have a website there, brother?
I don't. But I'm just about to put one up. Safehealthynatural.com.
So. Safehealthynatural.com will be the website, and you've got an email there people can contact you.
Yes, I would love to hear from people. ghatchard@gmail.com. I'm really happy to correspond with people. Yes, ghatchard@gmail.com.
ghatchard@gmail. It's just that easy. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Please make sure to go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today for my health, because let's face it, financial anxiety ain't good for one's stress levels, which cause about 90% of all illness. We'll see you again sometime, folks. Cheers for listening.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
People of dumb. You can say what you want about this country, and I love this place. I love the freedoms we used to have.
I love it.
I love that. You know? I love it when it didn't take catastrophe to get us to care for one another. I love the fact that we're on camera all the time from all angles. But you know what? You can say what you want about America. And I say I love this place. I wouldn't have it any other way. Wouldn't live it any other time in history in any other place. But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some dumbass people floating around this country. Yeah. And this ain't just ranting and raving. This ain't just blowing off steam. I got a little evidence to support my claim. It just seems to me that only a really low IQ population could have taken this beautiful continent, this magnificent American landscape that we inherited. Well, actually, we stole it from the Mexicans and the Indians, but hey, it was nice when we stole it. It looked pretty good. It was pristine. Paradise. Have you seen it lately? Have you taken a good look at it lately? It's embarrassing. Only a nation of unenlightened half-wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall. A big shopping mall. You know that? That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just dandy.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.